from WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. First, it was White Castle and Red Robin, then Burger King.
Introducing Impossible Burger. It's meat made entirely from plants that can be cooked up in all sorts of ways. It's nature and science working together.
Vegan meat substitutes are popping up at fast food chains across the nation, raising questions about how much better they really are for the environment, for animals, and for you. Garrett Broad is Assistant Professor of Communication and Media Studies at Fordham University and author of More Than Just Food, Food Justice and Community Change. Garrett, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to be talking a lot about the Impossible Burger. So first things first, have you actually tried it?
I have. I've had the Impossible Burger at a few different locations, from the higher end to the fast food burger. So here in New York City, they're at Bear Burger, which is a sort of more higher end. They serve a lot of organic as well as the Impossible Burger. And then actually across the street from my office, there's a White Castle. I will say it's actually the first time I've ever eaten at a White Castle, but I got the Impossible Slider there as well.
All right. So thumbs up or thumbs down?
Look, I enjoy it. It's a tasty burger, but I'm not really necessarily the target audience as someone who hasn't eaten meat in over a decade. So it tastes good. It tastes meaty. It tastes enjoyable. But from the company's perspective, I'm not who they're trying to convince.
Well, so let's talk about what's actually in the Impossible Burger and what they've done to appeal to that target audience. So this is not lab-grown fake meat. This is actually basically a high-tech veggie burger made with wheat, potato, soy protein. But then it actually contains heme protein like you find in muscles and blood, like you would find in red meat. But in this case, it's been produced by genetically modified yeast. And it actually had to be tested on animals in order to get FDA approval. I mean, it seems kind of ironic given that one of the stated aims of the Impossible Burger is to eliminate animal suffering.
Yeah, so there's a lot there, so I'll try to take a few points one by one. So they're really trying to, in many ways, change the definition of meat to be something that doesn't necessarily have to come from an animal. They're trying to say, this is meat, it just happens to be meat from plants. And so they're saying, you know, meat is really a composition of amino acids and lipids and water and tastes and texture and feel. And they're trying to say, we can make that exact thing out of plants. So you mentioned a couple other points. One is this question of heme, soy like hemoglobin or heme. Heme is this element that really gives meat its kind of meaty taste and that kind of, you know, bloody feel. And so the Impossible Foods company was able to find this heme in a soy root. From there, they did genetically engineer it in yeast. And so they did that as a way that they argue that it's much more environmentally possible to sort of do that at scale. And so they put this heme from genetically engineered yeast into their product, and that's one of the things that gives it that kind of very meaty taste. There are other products, the Beyond Burger as an alternative, that uses beet juice, for instance, to kind of give it that bloodiness, right? And they don't use genetic engineering in their product, although they do use other sort of techniques of food science, right? And so the other point you mentioned was the testing on animals. That is very controversial and certainly among those in the vegan community who maybe want to support this product because they see it as potentially displacing eating, you know, real meat. The argument that the Impossible Foods folks made was this was really key to getting FDA approval specifically for that heme molecule.
Well, Garrett Broad, your work in part focuses on storytelling and how the stories that we tell or hear and share influence our food choices and our food systems. And the story that we're kind of getting from Impossible Foods is that the Impossible Burger is, as you just said, redefining meat. It's meat without animals. It's better for the planet. It's better for us. At the end of the day, given how processed it is to get from, soy and potato to something that looks and feels and tastes like a beef patty, is it actually all of those things? Does that story stand up?
You know, there are a lot of big promises that are coming out of this emerging alternative protein industry, the plant-based food industry, the plant-based meat industry. You also made some reference earlier to the cultured meat, cell-based meat, sometimes called lab-grown meat, which is a different process that involves deriving from cell cultures of animals and actually growing actual, you know, animal tissue in a laboratory bioreactor setting. And across this arena, they're making these big promises, right? As you say, it's better for the environment, it's better for animals, it's better for the planet, it's going to feed the world, and it's going to do so sustainably and in a healthy way. At this stage, the answer to does it meet those promises is maybe kind of, and it depends, and maybe they could get better, right? So I'll take a couple of the points, one by one. So the first one is actually the one that they usually don't lead with, especially when they're trying to market to a meat eating, you know, American public and global public, which is, is it better for the animals? And I think that's the one where you can say, okay, there's a clear win. If you care about animal suffering and if you would like to see fewer animals produced for meat and slaughtered for meat, then there's a win, right? There's an animal welfare win. We're potentially redirecting folks who would be eating actual animal meat to these other products, fewer animals killed, you know, reductions in suffering. There's the biggest, clearest win is actually the one they talk about the least. When it comes to environmental impact, there have been a couple of what's called life cycle analyses done, looking at both the Impossible Burger and the Beyond Burger, among other products. And there are certainly some folks who critique these life cycle analyses, and there's a lot of sort of decisions that have to be made about what are we measuring and what are we paying attention to. But on things like global warming potential and CO2 equivalent emissions, water consumption, the use of land, as well as water pollution, what's called eutrophication potential. Impossible Burger argues through some of their life cycle analyses that they could have, you know, major reductions up to 90%. And the Beyond Burger, they offer similar numbers there.
I have to say, I find that almost surprising, given how much plant material you would need and how much processing it goes through. That's, I mean, I guess good news, a good surprise, but just seems hard to even believe.
Yeah, the big thing, the big difference is when you're raising livestock, which is what these particular products that we're talking about, you know, are focusing on beef, ruminant animals, cows in particular, they need a lot of feed. And they need a lot of land. And so, you know, if you're kind of cutting out that middle cow, right, you're using less feed, even though you're using these plant materials to go into these, these plant-based burgers, it's less than the feed required to go to the animals themselves. And same for things like water and then land. You know, ruminant animals need a lot of land. And so there are big potential gains that come from that. Now, here's where things get really sticky, which is this question of nutrition that you raise, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, is it actually healthier? It feels like probably the least healthy feeling vegetable you've ever eaten.
Yeah.
And apparently one formulation at least had, I think, as much salt and as much fat as a beef burger.
Right. So the question is, are you just eating the patty or are you eating it on a big old bun with mayo and cheese and, you know, ketchup that's got sugar in it and, you know, and eating it with a side of fries, right? You know, these are not being marketed necessarily as health foods. There are certain things that you can see being an advantage, if you're concerned, for instance, about saturated fat, and there's, you know, a literature that connects saturated fat consumption to cardiovascular issues, for instance. But the philosophy of folks at places like Impossible Foods is, look, this is the way people eat. We need to give them stuff that is cheap, tasty, convenient. We need to go to the places where they're eating these meat burger products already, and we need to slide our patty in there instead. And there can be some nutritional gains, but this is not a health food.
Garrett Broad, you spend a lot of time thinking about how our food systems intersect with issues of social justice. And I wonder where the Impossible Burger fits into that picture. I mean, this is an option that's better for the environment, better for animals, maybe a little bit better for people and available at fast food chains, which we know can play an important and even outsized role in the lives of low-income Americans. Is there a social justice issue here?
Yeah, I think there needs to be. I would love to, you know, have more of a conversation about ways that we can ensure this. And there are some examples in the kind of growing plant-based food world of some companies that are really trying to think about these as a tool for economic development. I mean, you know, farmers are another consideration here, right? So I would love to see, you know, programs that really try to, you know, work with farmers to figure out, you know, how can we transition farmers potentially who have maybe been feeding, you know, animal commodity crops to animals. How might we transition them to growing pulses, lentils, pea protein, all these sorts of things that are often going into these products, and do it in a way that is environmentally sustainable and economically beneficial for these communities?
Garrett Broad is Assistant Professor of Communication and Media Studies at Fordham University and author of More Than Just Food, Food Justice and Community Change. Garrett, thanks so much.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.